Hello, everyone. Today marks 40 years since the signing of the so-called Anglo-Irish Agreement at Hillsborough Castle, Northern Ireland. So Hillsborough Castle is the House of Windsor's official residence in Northern Ireland. Of course, those days, the Troubles were exploding, and so members of the Britannic royal family very seldom visited Northern Ireland. Elizabeth II visited in 1977 for a silver jubilee, and there was a huge security operation, and again in 1992 for the 40th anniversary of accession, and hardly at all apart from that. But so it was, they chose to meet there. It was a secure location. It was felt that government ministers from the United Kingdom couldn't be adequately protected in the Republic of Ireland, so they did it there. They did it in Northern Ireland because it was about Northern Ireland, and so on. So the Taoiseach, Dr. Garrett Fitzgerald, he went to sign it. I will never forgive myself for not going to meet him, because he was in Oxford one time and all the Irish people studying there were invited to go and have tea with him. And I forgot. And he died a few years later. Anyway, so he's an honourable man and one of the best actually Taoiseach we ever had. And Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland at the time. So the Troubles have been going on and on. Margaret Thatcher, she was a firm unionist, and unionists in Northern Ireland, as in they want to remain part of the United Kingdom, they were buoyed up by the fact that she won office. And 1981, when various terrorists, both IRA and ILLA, committed suicide in prison by starving themselves to death, she said that that was the Republican terrorists playing their last card. And indeed, in the early 1980s, political violence did go down. The casualty figures were relatively low. 1972 had been about 500 people killed that year. The early 80s, about 50 people a year. It did start to go up in the mid-80s again. But the security forces had made major progress. But nevertheless, there wasn't that perception by the public, because on the news, there was sort of negative items quite frequently. Most people just didn't see the data that, yeah, there is violent crime. You know, by the late 80s, Belfast's murder rate was half that of London, and its homicide rate was much lower than most major US cities. But then it's because it's politicized. It was exploited by the terrorist organizations, both loyalist and Republican, that were committing these crimes to make capital out of it. So Maggie Thatcher said that about Bobby Sands, the first one to top himself through starvation, that crime is crime, it's not political. I mean, I somewhat disagree. Crime is sometimes politically motivated, but that doesn't make it any less a crime. So for the Republic of Ireland, Fine Gael would then shoot dead people in Fianna Fáil, or the Labour Party were to kill people, and the Progressive Democrats as then was, you know, that is still a crime. I don't care that it's political actuation. It's just as bad. It's no excuse. There's no diminution of the severity of what they did. But they're trying to improve the situation. So after the hunger strikes, Sinn Féin, they decided they would contest elections to Westminster, which they hadn't done for some years. Obviously, Sinn Féin, as in ourselves alone, the ultra-nationalist, racist, sectarian party of the IRA, it's really the IRA, the balaclava off, they said, well, it was just for selling newspapers and raising funds. But no, was actually going to contest some elections. It did get some people elected to the local councils, which just shows how free and fair the United Kingdom is. No other country would allow an openly pro-terrorist party to contest elections. That's unimaginable. It shows how humane, how glorious the United Kingdom is. Another point is the UK is one of the few countries which allows most non-citizens resident there to vote. Irish citizens and nationalists in Northern Ireland, Eugene and Cambridge, British citizenship, they were entitled to vote. Commonwealth citizens in the UK, they're allowed to vote, as in citizens of India, Nigeria, Trinidad, Malaysia, wherever it may be. And, you know, the United States obviously heavily hypocritically criticized the United Kingdom for its glorious battle against terrorism, but the United States would never allow non-citizens to vote. It just shows how magnificent the United Kingdom is. Anyway, so Maggie Thatcher was worried about the electoral success of Sinn Féin, and the IRA continued its crimes, its attacks on civilians in Great Britain, deliberately murdering unarmed people and so forth. The new Ireland Forum had been established by the Irish government, by Dr. Fitzgerald, to look at various possible solutions. John Hume, leader of the Social Democratic and Labour Party, the Constitutional Nationalist Party, he wanted to undermine the IRA to bring peace and so forth. So there was an Anglo-Irish Council which met occasionally, and Mrs. Thatcher realised she had to have some sort of working relationship with Dr. Fitzgerald. He was an advocate for the nationalist community in Northern Ireland. And his mother was even his grandmother's a Presbyterian from Northern Ireland. He made some anti-Protestant remark as a child. He said, "Don't say that because I'm a Protestant," which he hadn't even realized because he just imbibed some of these anti-Protestant attitudes. Now, I mustn't exaggerate the level of anti-Protestantism in Southern Ireland at the time, because he's born like in the early 1920s. So in the United States, some demagogic, ignorant politicians led by Tip O'Neill, Edward Moynihan, Edward Kennedy, Daniel Moynihan, they decided to interfere in the United Kingdom's internal affairs and so on, and made all sorts of bogus accusations against the United Kingdom. And Maggie Thatcher, she wanted a good relationship with the United States, but she realized that she needed to mollify them. So President Reagan, a Republican, he was a Republican, had a good relationship with Thatcher, but he couldn't be completely deaf to what Congress was saying. So Thatcher realized that she needed to make some concessions and so forth. And the role of President Reagan was pivotal. So there were some secret negotiations, but the Irish government kept the SDLP fully briefed, whereas Her Majesty's government did not tell Unionist parties what was going on because they would not like it. So the agreement was eventually signed and it was passed narrowly in Dáil Éireann. Fianna Fáil, the more nationalist of the major parties, voted against. It was passed in the Parliament of the United Kingdom, the most popular thing that Thatcher ever did. It got about 90% of the votes in the House of Commons. Only the Ulster Unionists and some real hardcore Unionists in the Conservative Party were against and so on. It was agreed that army patrols would also have the Royal Ulster Constabulary, that's the police going with them in almost all cases. That at Maryfield, just outside Belfast, civil servants in the Republic of Ireland will be there to monitor the situation and to act as a sort of an advocate for the nationalist community in Northern Ireland. Now Unionists found this unacceptable, said interference from the Republic, saying, but UK's got no input to what happens in the Republic of Ireland. Why on earth should the Irish government have any sway over what happens in Northern Ireland? And so forth. Now, this is partly, there's meant to be an enhanced security cooperation in return. And I remember, Norman Tebbit. I went to a lunch with him about 2000, said that the Irish government welched on that from the beginning. We got it wrong. What else can I say? But Unionists were incensed. They felt let down. They're often talking about betrayal, Lundy and stuff like that. They felt it was rewarding terrorism, things like that. So a referendum was refused on this issue. Therefore, the Democratic Unionist Party, then led by the Reverend Ian Paisley, and the Ulster Unionist Party led by James Molyneux, they all resigned to trigger by-elections. They ran dummy candidates named Peter King as the Ireland's foreign minister. Peter Barry. Barry from a prominent Cork family known for Barry's tea. But so they won most of these by-elections handily. They lost down south, as in that was the seat of Enoch Poll, an Englishman who sat for someone in Ulster, won by Eddie McGrady of the SDLP. So opinion polls show that 75% of Unionists would have voted no to this, 65% of Nationalists would vote yes. Overall, it was something like a 70% no. But nevertheless, the British government is entitled to make an agreement about any parts of the UK. And some of the loyalist terrorists were also attacking the IUC as they thought that was somehow responsible for this. Molyneux said it was hypocritical. Reverend Ian Paisley said, Ulster says no to a united Ireland. We'll never accept this, never, ever, ever, and so on. So some people felt it was leading to disdain. So it was an upswing in violence partly because of this. Now, IRA said, in as much as it represents even a tiny advance for nationalism, that's because of the IRA and not because of Irish government diplomacy. So was the right thing to do? I think it was the right thing to do, to try and improve relations between the Republic of Ireland and the United Kingdom. They were kind of in the deep freeze at the time. Nevertheless, Irish citizens were privileged. With any citizens of other countries allowed to live in the United Kingdom automatically, and don't just mean Northern Ireland, I mean Great Britain. We had mass unemployment in the Irish Republic at the time. You may not realize, but in Western Europe, one of the poorest countries. And we couldn't automatically go to the US back then. So Great Britain was a crucial outlet to us. Despite some of the Irish community in Great Britain being pro-IRA, others having mixed feelings, many against. Goodness. So that's, you can see why unionists, it was not just the content of it, but the fact that they felt it was devious, that they weren't kept briefed. So actually, Sinn Féin was not doing as well in the elections by the mid-80s as they realized, but the SDLP said this is an effective negotiating position. Thatcher will make more concessions to nationalism because she wants people to see that politics works, so people are not attracted to terrorism and so on. So that was it. And actually, one of the demands of the unionists after the Good Friday Agreement was to close down Maryfield, where the Irish Secretariat was. I remember in the run-up to the Good Friday Agreement, Blair says in his autobiography, A Journey, says to one of the unionist politicians, anything we could do to help. They said, close Maryfield. He said, Maryfield? The Scottish rugby stadium. He said, no, Maryfield. Blair had never even heard of it. So he says, just shut it down completely. He said, to this day, I've got no idea what happens there. And those civil servants from Southern Ireland in Northern Ireland were in danger from loyalist terrorists. So far as I know, none were actually attacked. And so the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Tom King, who was followed around by loyalist protesters, denouncing the Good Friday Agreement wherever he went. Well, he didn't realise there was a mole in the Northern Ireland office. One of the civil servants was very anti-agreement and was leaking in advance his whereabouts. These people, they weren't trying to kill him, but they were barracking him. Anyway, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Donate a PayPal, georgecalan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.